Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 10 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. This is program 190 in the series. It's June 18th. It's the day after Father's Day. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
Good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
And what did Dan do this Father's Day? Were you really nice to him, I hope?
I'm always really nice to him, Carl.
Oh, good.
We had a whole lot of people. We had about 20 people at my house for lunch. So it was fun. It was a big family celebration.
It's a lot of lunch.
It's a lot of people.
That's a lot of lunch.
It's a lot. It wasn't enough lunch. No.
Did you barbecue or what did you do?
I did not. I ordered in.
You ordered in. You're good at that.
I know. We had Mexican. It was fun.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it was great.
All right.
Thank
and Shantae
you.
Garth is our producer. She's in the booth. And tonight we have three great classic radio shows. We're going to start things off with a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, starring Madeline Carroll. Then it's Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, and then Dragnet with Jack Webb. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming film Life in a Year, about a 17-year-old boy who finds out that his girlfriend is dying and sets out to give her an entire lifetime in the last year that she has left.
Sounds like a tearjerker.
Oh, doesn't it? Oh, my gosh.
I don't think I can watch
it. I don't like that.
Oh, boy.
But it's I don't know. I think sounds like it's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
And the winner here gets a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you know the answer, here's a hint. This actor was the lead in The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Whatever you decide to do, whether you're with me or not, you got to know this. I loved her.
All right. Who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our Lou Malnati's pizza winner right after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you for listening to us. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip again.
Whatever you decide to do, whether you're with me or not, you got to know this. I loved her.
We have John on the line. Hey, John.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Carl.
Hey,
how
John.
Are you?
Great, great.
Great. Well, it's good to hear from you. And who's that actor?
It is Cuba Gooding Jr.
You are right. Cuba. Some people say Cuba.
I think it's Cuba.
I say whatever you say is probably the right way to say it. I'm going to go with Cuba Gooding Jr. And you are a winner. We're so happy to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Of course, Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, our favorite deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. Congratulations. We hope you love the pizza, and thanks for staying up with us tonight.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoy it every week.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay, John's a big winner. He's going to order a pizza, invite us over.
Yes,
and we're going to eat it, and he'll just watch us eat it.
Yeah, well, we'll share.
That's what we do. We give people pizza, and then we come over to their house and eat it.
Well, we kind of expect the invitation,
you know,
so we're going to wait for it.
Right, they want it on our show, so they should have us over so we can eat it.
I think so.
I think that makes sense.
Get a few salads,
makes sense, and we're all happy. All right. So you want to start things off with suspense?
It's time.
The number to call, by the way, to text us while these shows are on the air, because we get back to just about everyone if we can. 312-981-7200. That's our text in line if you have any questions about the show or any comments or anything like that, right?
Yeah, we have lots of people who just say hello.
I'm listening from...
Jose always texts in and says hi to all of us at the beginning of every show,
nice.
Which is always
Thanks, Jose.
Warm welcome.
Yeah.
And it's nice to hear from everyone. We also have a Facebook page. Our schedule's posted on there. There's photos of the actors on there. And we can communicate with
That's at our Facebook.
You. I just said that.
Right.
Yeah. So is it at our Facebook page?
Yeah, but you got to tell them. You got to go to Facebook, then search WGN Radio Theater.
You know, anybody who's ever gone on Facebook
well,
would know how to do it.
I don't do Facebook.
So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here.
I'm not a social media guy.
I know. So that's why you have me.
But you know what I am? An old-time radio guy.
That's for sure.
I like old-time radio, and I have an episode for you now. This is Suspense, the best series of all the radio mystery series, in my opinion, and I think in many experts' opinion. This is from September 2nd, 1948. It's called The Morrison Affair, and it stars Madeline Carroll. Here's part one of Suspense.
In just a moment, Suspense with Madeline Carroll.
Hello. Oh, hello, Tom. Where are you? Thought you were driving over tonight. Couldn't get your car started. Well, what's wrong with it? Well, sounds like ignition trouble to me, Tom. Why don't you call Ed's Auto Electric, best service station in town? He's an Autolite man. Really knows his stuff and believes in preventive service. You know, fixes things before they happen. Carries Autolite parts. You know, Autolite. Spark plugs, batteries, complete ignition systems. Yeah, that's right, the works. Oh, by the way, Tom, Autolite has that swell high-tension show on the air, Suspense. Ever hear of it? Well, why don't you tune in? It's coming on right now.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Miss Madeline Carroll in Anton Leder's production of The Morrison Affair, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Oh, Mr. Ballou, there's a woman outside. She doesn't have an appointment, but she must speak to Mr. Ballou privately.
All right, I'll see her.
I'll lay you 6 to 5. It's a divorce. She's got that nothing must get in the paper look. Will you come in, please? Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Ballou.
Please sit down. Dottie, buzz me when it's 5:30.
Okay, Mr. Ballou. We can't be overheard here, can we?
No. Now then, Mrs.
I'd rather you didn't take notes.
Oh, well, all right. But I do need your name.
I'll tell you later. Do lawyers have any kind of code or rule against revealing confidential information?
Like priests? Yes. However, you want me to promise before I hear your case?
Yes.
All right, if it makes you feel better. I've handled hundreds of divorces.
Oh.
And never lost a patient. It is a divorce.
Yes, in a way. But he's dangerous, and there's a child.
The courts usually lean toward giving the mother custody.
I know, but Mr. Ballou, I'm in desperate trouble. I'm afraid. You can't understand till I tell you.
Well, then?
You see, I'm English. My husband is American. He grew up here in Boston, a very prominent family. The Morrisons. He's Dr. Paul Morrison.
Yes, I know Dr. Morrison.
Oh?
That is, I've heard of him.
Then you know he's a surgeon. I met Paul in London in 1939. We were married very soon after we met. And then England went to war, and Paul decided to stay in England to help out. He was different then. So deeply concerned over human suffering. The war changed him hideously. But those first 2 years in London, we were happy. Almost completely happy. Quite suddenly, America was in the war. And Paul had his orders to return to the American Army Medical Corps. We spent the little time we had left at a cottage in the country. And all the time I was trying to forget the one thing that had been preying on my mind ever since they told me at the hospital that... But I couldn't. And so finally, even though it was our last day together, I went up to London to do what I had always known someday I would have to do. It was late afternoon when I returned.
Who is it? Oh, darling, where on earth have you been?
I'm sorry I'm so late, Paul. Well,
never mind about being sorry. Come over here this instant. Give me a kiss. Want to know something?
What?
You're a heartless hussy going off and leaving me alone all day. Our last day.
Do you think I'd have gone if it hadn't been important?
Now, look, darling, I'm a doctor, too. I don't know what doctor you went to see this time, but... None of us can perform miracles.
I don't believe in miracles, Paul, and I didn't go to London to see a doctor. I went to find out if we could adopt a child.
Adopt a child?
I know you've always been against the idea, Paul.
Darling, this is no time to go into a big, complicated thing like that. I've got to be on my way home by this time tomorrow.
It's not this time tomorrow I'm thinking about, Paul. It's all my life. If I can't have a child of my own, then I want to adopt one.
But, Sheila,
I sort of halfway picked out one at the orphanage today.
What?
His parents were killed in an air raid, and oh, Paul, you've always wanted a boy.
I've wanted a son, yes. But adopting a child involves certain risks. There are fundamental laws of heredity.
Now you're being plain old-fashioned.
You can call it anything you like. It's out of the question.
Why? Give me one reason why.
You know the reasons as well as I do.
All I know is I'm a woman and I want a child.
Sheila, come here. Look at me. Maybe I'm old-fashioned or overcautious, but if we got a child that way, picked him out like something on a grocery shelf, you might feel he was your son, but he wouldn't be mine. And a son has to be for both of us, or not at all.
I stayed on in London for more than 6 months after Paul left. It was ghastly there for everyone. As for me, I lived in a fever of loneliness, worse than loneliness. Then my mother asked me down to the country to wait out the war with her. It was a summer evening when I took a crowded train from Paddington, and I sat alone in the compartment, numb with my hunger for Paul. You must understand, that day I wasn't myself. I wasn't accountable. You see, I had a double kind of loneliness. When the conductor opened my compartment door for other passengers, I didn't even look up at first.
Here you are, missus. I'll shoot you.
Oh, thank you ever so much.
It's the window seat.
I want the window seat.
Now then, you two. I reckon the missus is going to want some of that fresh air for the little nipper.
Here, you can have my seat if you like. It doesn't make any difference to me.
Oh, it's very kind of you, miss, I'm sure.
Mum, I want to see the guardsmen.
Not now, Johnny.
But, Mum, you promised.
Missus, I'll let you know when we're near Reading Junction.
Oh, thank you.
No trouble at all, missus.
I hope Mary's not taking up too much room on the seat, miss.
No, not at all.
Well, she's shoving and pushing me, Mum.
Now, Mary.
I'm not either. I just need more room.
Oh, now, stop. You just stop this. Mary, stop rummaging in my carry-all. There's nothing in it to eat. Oh, dear. Children can be such a trial. Now, what? Now, hush. Yes, I know you're hungry.
Can I hold him for a minute?
What, miss?
Who like to look at pictures? Here's a magazine with all sorts of pictures about America. My husband sent it to me.
Oh, that's kind of you, miss, I'm sure. Now, thank you, lady. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that'll keep them quiet. A mother ought to be two people, that she ought.
I'll hold the baby while you fill his bottle.
Well, if it won't trouble you.
Oh, no. I don't mind.
Yeah.
I sat there, scarcely breathing, looking down at the baby in my lap. It was as though I'd never felt warmth before. He stopped whimpering and looked up at me with very big brown eyes that seemed to hold recognition.
He's taken a real fancy to you, miss, and no mistake.
What's his name?
Jamie. It was his father's name. He was killed last week in a bomber over Germany.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. But at least you have the children.
Oh, yes, miss. But sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I think it would be better if I didn't have this last one.
Oh, no, you can't mean that.
It's not easy, miss, with no man to provide. You said you're married, miss. Do you have any children?
No, I have no children. Baby.
You'd know if you had one. Knowing all the things I won't be able to give him. I can't help thinking he'd be better off if I left him on someone's doorstep, so to speak. Someone well fixed, like you.
You'd regret it all your life.
But it's his life I'm thinking about when I say it. Of course, I'm not brave enough to do it. But I wish I was. Oh, well. If wishes was horses, as they say.
We're just pulling into Reading Junction, missus, if you still want to get that cup of tea.
Oh, thank you, Johnny, Mary.
Come on, Mary. Mum's going to get us something to eat.
I want to see this pie first.
Well, you can look at the magazine when you come back.
Now, run along, bus. I'll be on wait for me outside.
All right, Mum. Come on, lady.
Wait till I get my coffee.
I'll take Jamie now, miss.
I'm going to sit right here. Why don't I hold him till you come back?
Oh, I wouldn't want to bother you.
Oh, it's no bother at all.
Well, you won't have any trouble with him. He's always been a good baby.
Mom, come on,
Mom. Come in, I'll wait. If you're sure, miss. Quite sure?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. Maybe you'll say what I did was wicked, that she didn't tell me to take her child. But I know she did. She made her decision and I made mine. After a few minutes, I got up and carried the baby down the corridor. I was trembling so I was afraid I'd drop him. I managed to get off the train and made my way across the crowded platform. It was nearly time for the train to pull out.
Hurry up, girl. Train's leaving.
Then I saw the woman, her two older children coming toward me. I stepped behind a post.
Oh, she's a pig. Mary's a wicked pig. Too far.
I stood there and watched the three climb onto the train. Then it began to move. And it was the brakes or a train whistle. If only I hadn't imagined it was something else. Above the racket of the train, it sounded like... like a woman screaming.
Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Miss Madeline Carroll in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hello. Oh, it's you again, Tom. Swell program, eh? What? The name of that Autolite service station? Well, it's Ed's Auto Electric. Just look for the big Autolite sign down on Main Street. But wait, here's more dope on Autolite service. Listen to Frank Martin.
For expert ignition checkup and repair, stop at your nearest Autolite service station. Highly trained mechanics working with specialized machines are ready to give your car the best, most complete, most reliable ignition service possible. And when it comes to replacement parts, why, money can't buy finer ignition equipment than Autolite. Autolite is the world's largest independent manufacturer of electrical equipment for automobiles. And many of America's finest cars and trucks are equipped with Autolite distributors, coils, generators, starting motors, batteries, and spark plugs right on the assembly line. So friends, if you want truly reliable ignition parts and service, call on your nearest Autolite service station or the car dealer who sells your make of car.
Autolite service stations are listed in your classified telephone directory under Automotive Electrical Service.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Miss Madeline Carroll as Sheila in The Morrison Affair, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I can't file for your divorce, Mrs. Morrison, until you and your husband turn the child over to the British consul.
My husband doesn't know.
He thinks it's his child.
He suspects something's wrong, but...
Well, then make a clean breast of it. Tell him.
Oh, no, you mustn't. He mustn't ever know. He'll kill me or Jamie or both of us.
How on earth did you make your husband believe?
That was easy. I figured it all out on the way to Mother's. I took a bus at Reading Junction, then another train. It was almost midnight when I got home and let myself in the front door.
All right, that's the first portion of a tale well calculated to keep us in suspense with The Morrison Affair from 1948. Madeline Carroll starring in this. Also in the cast, Gerald Moore. Gerald Moore played Philip Marlowe on the radio, Lisa. Did you know that? I'm sure you did.
You know, yeah. Only from you, but yeah. I'm learning.
Yes, you are. It's only been, what, 10 years?
Yeah, so I've picked up one or two tidbits in the last 10 years.
Actually, you know your stuff. Every once in a while, you know, you'll say something that really surprises me.
Just every once in a while.
Yeah.
I thought I was a surprise every
night. You are. You're a mystery. Just like this, suspense.
Right.
Let's take a quick break, like a 15-second break, and then we'll be right back.
I'm for sale.
I'm definitely for sale. You're for sale, too?
I certainly am.
I would, I mean...
I think we need a job at Amazon.
15, 20 cents? I'm sold. Sold. For me.
I think we need a job at Amazon.
Yeah.
They
what
are
can we do
so
for them?
I don't know. Is there
we can
something?
Deliver old-time radio shows to people through Amazon. That'd be good. Right?
Yeah.
No, but
they can buy them through Amazon.
Jeff Bezos, if you're listening, I'm for sale.
Yeah, we both are.
All right. We're going to take a break for news. Roger's up there. Hey, you know what? Yeah. Roger, yes, we have some stuff down here, some surprises.
We're celebrating a birthday tonight.
I'm so sorry. I've been running, trying to get things done for
you
the overnight.
You should be sorry.
And I am sorry.
You should be sorry, but when you're free and you have a few minutes, we hope that you'll come all the way down here and hang with us for a few
minutes. Esmeralda, too, I hope you'll come down because we have some goodies down here for Roger.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It is 11:37 on a Sunday night.
It's
Father's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sunday night.
I spent time with my daughter, Rachel, today.
Good.
It was fun. We went over by my sister's house, and I saw my mom and my sister. And someone texted a little earlier, asked how I'm doing on my diet.
Yes, they messaged in.
I started Nutrisystem this week. It didn't come till like Wednesday. So I had started sort of preparing myself for not eating that much, and I was doing a lot of working out and everything. So between a couple of days on Nutrisystem and just working out a little extra and playing a lot of baseball, I'm down 3 pounds.
Well, with your treat for Roger's birthday tonight.
Yeah, I'm eating the whole thing.
I don't know.
I'm going to eat the whole thing.
We'll see how that goes
for you. So someone texted and asked how I'm doing on my diet. So far, so good. 3 pounds.
Good. Well, it's been, what, 3 days?
But it's crazy because I normally walk around about 170, and I weighed myself last week, and I hadn't weighed myself in 4 or 5 months, and I was 188. Oof.
Well, you know what? Now that the weather's nicer and you're out playing baseball and being more active, I think it's a lot easier to stay in shape. You got to wear shorts and, you know, tank tops and things.
Yeah.
Do you wear tank tops?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
Of course I do. So my goal now, though, is I don't want to get back down to 170. I want to get even lower than 170. I want to get down to 160.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be lean, mean, fighting machine then,
all right.
Lisa.
Well, you just keep us
look
posted.
Out.
See
you know,
how
you're
it's
always
going.
Like, hey, let's do a video-licious, or hey, let's do this, or hey, and I'm always like, nah, because I feel heavy. But you know what? I'm going to get down to 160.
Well, we're going to do a video tonight either
and
way
then I'm
because
be,
we want to post Roger's birthday.
Then I'm going to jump out of a cake for Roger when I'm down to 160.
Oh, well,
how's
that? Will be
that?
Fun. Yeah. Are you going to be fully clothed?
A bathing suit.
Really?
Oh, is that Roger now?
We were just talking about
right.
you, Roger.
Well, we have to go to the suspense, and then we're gonna do Roger's surprise.
Perfect.
All right, it's back to Madeline Carroll starring in Suspense.
Mother was waiting up.
Is that you, Sheila?
Yes, Mother.
Oh, you've had me well at all.
Sheila.
Is the fire still lit in the kitchen, Mum?
Yes.
But don't ask questions now, please. He's hungry. I'm going to heat him up some milk.
Whose baby is it?
He's mine now.
What do you mean, Sheila? Whose was he?
I don't know. Here, hold him while I get the milk.
Oh, shh, baby, shh. You mean you've adopted him?
I stole him.
Sheila.
I don't ask you to understand, Mother. I only ask you to help me. Because I'm your child and because I can't ever have a child of my own.
But Paul won't let you keep this child.
If he thinks it his own, he will.
Oh, look, the poor little mite starving.
Yes. It may be years before the war's over and I see Paul again. He'll look forward to seeing his son.
But he's bound to ask where his son was born.
He was born here.
But there are records of such things, Sheila. The date, the place, the parents, the doctor.
I know. Mother, telephone Dr. Lucas.
Dr. Lucas? Why, he's a charlatan. He's not even a real doctor.
Oh, does that matter? He's greedy, and that's the kind of man I need. Tell him I want to see him tomorrow. Because tomorrow, my son Jamie will be born. That night, before I went to bed, I cabled Paul at his last APO address. Why haven't you answered my letters? Or don't you like my news? His answering cable came in the morning. What letters? What news? We'll phone. It was going to be easy. Paul had traveled so much. New York, Baltimore, 3 months in the Pacific. It would be easy to make him believe that some of his mail had gone astray. I waited all day for Paul's call and for Dr. Lucas. That miserable little man took his time about it.
Mrs. Morrison, I'm late, but your mother assured me no one was ill.
No, it's about my son.
Why, I didn't hear that you
I'm
had
having
a...
difficulties about his birth record. I've lost the certificate and I need a duplicate.
Why, Mrs. Morrison, I'm sure if you write
As a matter of fact, I want the record changed.
Changed?
I want the certificate to say that he was born here today.
Mrs. Morrison.
It can be done, can't it?
It's rather difficult.
You mean it's expensive?
Yes, very expensive. There's the risk to a doctor's reputation.
How much?
£1,000.
All right.
No, I'm afraid it will have to be £1,200.
All right, but that's all I can pay. Here, you can write it out under this lamp.
One moment, I'll find the form. Yes, here it is.
He's the son of Mr. and Mrs. Paul Morrison. Excuse me, please. Yes?
Go ahead, Major Morrison.
Hello? Hello, Sheila.
Paul! Paul, darling! Where are you?
India. I turned the whole army inside out to get a priority. Can you hear me all right?
Fine. But, darling, why didn't you answer my letters?
Well, I answered every one I got.
Then the important ones got lost or something. You haven't heard the news?
What news?
You're going to be a father, Paul. Did you hear me, Paul?
Yes. But, Sheila, that seems impossible.
But it's happened all the same. Any day now, you'll have a son and heir.
Oh, you've made up your mind. It's going to be a boy, eh?
That's what you want, isn't it?
Yes, it's what I want. But it seems like a miracle. I was dead certain that I...
Something wrong, Mrs. Morrison?
I was cut off. Operator. Operator.
Yes?
Operator, I was cut off. It was a call from India.
Didn't you hang up?
Certainly not. I was cut off.
Well, I'll try to get your party back.
Yes, try. But it's all right if you don't.
What is the name of your son, Mrs. Morrison?
Jamie. Jamie Morrison.
Jamie Morrison, born July 3rd, 1942. You know, Mrs. Morrison, heredity is tricky.
There's nothing wrong with my son's heredity.
And then there's always the danger of being found out, as long as anyone knows beside yourself.
At first, some nights I'd dreamed that Jamie's mother had come to fetch Jamie, but that was only at first. I buried my guilt, buried it deep. 4 years went by. Then the war was over, and Jamie and I sailed to join Paul in America. The day I arrived in New York, I may have been nervous, but I was sure at last of happiness, as sure as I'd ever been in my life. Oh, Paul! Paul, darling!
My dear. Oh, I've never seen you look better, darling. Motherhood suits you.
Is that my daddy?
Yes, Jamie.
Well, how do you do, James?
My name isn't James. It's Jamie.
Jamie?
Yes, I've always called him that. I don't know why. It's a kind of nickname, I suppose.
Well, from now on, we'd better settle for James. We Morrisons never appreciated nicknames. Funny about his eyes.
His eyes?
I've got to look up my Mendel. Can two blue-eyed people have a brown-eyed child?
They must. We did, no matter what Mendel says.
Well, he's positively the first Morrison with brown eyes. But why not? He's the miracle kid.
The miracle kid. Blue eyes. Brown eyes. I rolled the phrases around my mind, hunting their real meaning. I was oversensitive, of course, but from the first day I felt that Paul was hostile to Jamie.
Where's my miracle kid?
He's taking his nap. What do you want with him?
I'm driving down to the rifle range with a friend. I thought I'd take James along.
Oh, but he's too young, Paul.
Too young for what?
To play with guns.
Oh, that's just why I want to take him along. The sooner he knows how to handle guns, the better off he'll be.
Mommy! Where are you, Mommy?
Here I am, Jamie.
Mommy, I fell off.
Oh, darling, what's happened?
I fell off the horse. He went too fast and jumped around, and I fell off and hurt my knee.
Yeah, I brought the iodine. He's more scared than hurt.
Oh, not iodine. Use peroxide. It won't sting. I told you he was too young to ride.
Oh, it was a gentle horse. Jamie lost the seat when it started to trot, that's all. We'll do better next time, won't we, kid?
I guess so, Daddy.
There won't be a next time.
Yes, there will be, Sheila.
Jamie, go up to Mother's room, and I'll be along in a minute to fix your knee.
All right, Mommy.
There's candy in my bureau. You know where.
Yes, Mommy. I knew.
Paul, what are you trying to do?
I'm trying to make my son like my son.
He's my son, too, you know.
What you're doing to him, Sheila, he's not anybody's son. He's a zombie. I swear I'd rather see him dead than what you want him to be.
I suppose it was then that I first realized what I would have to do. That someday, someday soon, I'd have to get Jamie away from Paul. I was frightened. I even began to carry a gun in my bag, and I began to make plans. I'd start again, build a new life for myself and my son. Then yesterday, I knew that I'd have to hurry, that I couldn't postpone my decision any longer. I found out when Paul came home from the hospital. He came directly to my room.
Ah, there you are. I want to tell you something, Sheila.
What is it? What's happened?
A big day at the conference.
Oh, you mean the medical conference?
Yeah, a psychiatrist from Chicago named Drake read a paper on psychosomatic medicine. Terrific. And then there was a curious report on euthanasia. You know, mercy killing. Interesting, but extreme.
In what way?
Well, the doctor delivering the report favors not only the mercy killing of incurables, he advocates weeding out and purifying the race by studying heredity and eliminating those whose heredity is questionable. Real crackpot.
Horrible.
Sheila, while his report was going on, though, I began to wonder about you and Jamie.
About me and Jamie?
Yes. I wanted to ask you, is there something about Jamie's heredity that you don't want me to know?
Then I understood. The danger was real and now. For myself, but mostly for Jamie. Paul was playing with me like a cat plays with a mouse. This talk about mercy killing, heredity, this subtle, cruel talk, threatening me with Jamie's death, announcing in advance the mercy killing of a child who is inferior because he isn't a Morris. That's why I've come to you, Mr. Ballou. I can't risk Paul's getting custody. I have to take Jamie away first, far away where Paul can't reach him, and then get a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to tell me where it's safest for us to go and get the papers I need.
Mrs. Morrison, I promised that whatever you told me would be confidential. I'm sorry I made that promise. If I hadn't, I'd go to Dr. Morrison and tell
you
him
wouldn't.
That his wife carries a heavy load of guilt. A very heavy load. And it's coloring everything she does.
You think I'm insane?
I think you have dangerous delusions.
And you won't help me?
I can't, Mrs. Morrison. A psychiatrist might help you, but only if you go to him now before it's too late.
Hospital. Dr. Morrison said for you to come right away.
What is it, Elsa? What's happened?
It's the little boy.
Jamie!
He got hold of one of his daddy's guns.
He's done it. He's killed Jamie.
Jamie was playing with it and it went off and it was pointed right at itself. He's hurt bad.
Take my blood, Paul. Take it. I'll do anything.
Sheila, get hold of yourself. You're hysterical. We have to know his blood type first. The lab should be calling back any minute.
Paul, I'd rather you didn't operate. Ask Dr. McDonald.
Well, this isn't McDonald's kind of a case. Don't you trust me, Sheila?
I thought you might be too nervous being his father.
Am I, Sheila?
What?
Am I his father, Sheila? Dr. Morrison speaking. All right, it's the lab. Hello? Yes, Brooks. It's what? You're absolutely sure? You checked twice? I see. Yes, thank you. And gave the results of the blood test.
Paul.
We can't use your blood, Sheila.
You know from the blood test?
Yes, Dr. Morrison.
Get the boy ready for operation. I'll start immediately.
Yes, Doctor.
Know what, Sheila? No, don't tell me. All I know is that your blood is type A and mine is type A and James is type B. Wait here, Sheila.
Don't do it, Paul.
Do what?
I won't let you operate. I won't. Get Dr. McDonald. Or I'll kill you.
You're out of your mind. You can't shoot that gun.
I can and I will before I let you touch Jamie. Now that you know he's not your son...
I've always known it.
You're lying.
From the first moment I saw him. It's a proven medical fact. Two blue-eyed people cannot have a brown-eyed child.
And all your cruelty was deliberate.
At first, I thought you'd been unfaithful. That Jamie was your son and another man was his father. But the blood proves he's not yours either. You adopted him.
I stole him, and I'm not going to lose him now.
We're all ready, Dr. Morrison.
Thank you. Wait here, Sheila.
Paul, I warned you.
Mrs. Morrison, don't!
He fell like a sack of dry leaves. and liquid the color of dark grapes seeped through and spread slowly across the front of his surgeon's jacket. Then people came and dragged me away. I've seen no one since except those who guard me, and my lawyer, Mr. Ballou, who came to tell me that Paul was dead and that Jamie would live. The operation was performed successfully by Dr. McDonald. Then Mr. Ballou began to talk about how to defend me against the charge of murder. Why not tell him the truth?
Let me tell you the truth, Mrs. Morrison. After you shot Dr. Morrison, he could have lived. He had to choose between his life and Jamie's.
What could he do for Jamie?
The bullet had lodged in Jamie's brain. It would take hours to find a brain specialist as good as Dr. Morrison.
But he didn't operate?
He ordered them to take him to the operating room. Then for an hour and a half, he stood at Dr. McDonald's elbow, directing every move of his scalpel. When the operation was over, Dr. Morrison was dying. But Jamie would live.
And so, in my defense, Mr. Ballou intends to plead insanity. But I wasn't insane then. Nor am I now, I know that. I'm merely a selfish woman. Everything I did for myself, not for Jamie. I can see that now. But Paul gave his life for his son. And no matter what happens to him now, Jamie had a father.
Thank you, Madeline Carroll, for a splendid performance. And now, here again is Miss Madeline Carroll.
It's been a great pleasure to appear with this fine cast on Suspense. It's a program I've always enjoyed hearing, and I'm looking forward to next week's story, in which that rising young star, Burt Lancaster, appears. It's another gripping study in
Suspense.
Madeline Carroll appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, whose current production is The Luck of the Irish, starring Anne Baxter and Tyrone Power. Tonight's suspense play was written by Pamela Wilcox, with music composed by Lucian Morrowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as Gregory Peck, Edward G. Robinson, John Garfield, and others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And next Thursday, same time, hear Burt Lancaster.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Drive slowly. Death and danger travel in fast company. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
If it were 1948 right now and I was Anton M. Leader, the director and producer of this show, and you came and wanted to be part of this program, I'd make you the Autolite girl.
I would love to be the Autolite girl.
Yes. Can you do this? That would be perfect. Can you say switch to Autolite? Good night.
I can say anything you want me to say.
Try it.
No, I don't want to do it now.
Switch to Autolite. Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, perfect. That's Lisa Wolf as the Autolite girl on that program. That was The Morrison Affair from September 2nd, 1948, starring Madeline Carroll, also Gerald Moore in that production. He was Mr. Morrison. And hope you enjoyed Suspense. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. So we took a Facebook Live video, right? Is that the correct terminology of what we did?
I think so. Facebook Live.
When Roger was down here, we sang him happy birthday. We gave him some presents. And Lisa gave him a Bentley. One of her Bentleys.
She has four of them, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's only got 8,000 miles on it. So it's still.
I have so many more. I really won't miss it.
Yeah. And then we had some pie. We sang him, you know, a little happy birthday. I said that already.
You guys were in tune.
Yeah, we were in tune.
Really nice.
We're very talented.
Yeah. So if you want to check that out, just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater, and you can see our little 3-minute video.
Yeah,
right?
And we hope you'll like us on our Facebook page and check out our video.
Yeah, like us. All right, so Roger has a birthday coming up, and we love Roger, and we love giving him presents, including Bentleys.
Yeah.
You know, my birthday's August 20th, Lisa. Okay.
August 20th.
I really would like an Audi R8. Can you make that happen? Black, convertible.
You know what? Let's get two then, one for you, one for me. You take the black one. I'll take...
I want black.
No, I think I want a color. I'm ready for something a little brighter.
And can I get a little bit more detailed?
Yeah, kind of like yellow, you know?
Yellow?
Lisa?
I like yellow.
Can I give you a little bit more info on the car I want?
No, thanks.
And in the black, I would like some red stitching. You know, like stitching it.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Esmeralda. It is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here till 2 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and Sunday. Lisa and I and Shante, we are here bringing you the best in classic radio. All your favorite shows, Jack Benny, The Shadow, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, Lights Out, Abbott and Costello, Burns and Allen, you name it, we have it here every Saturday and Sunday night on the greatest radio station in the world, Radio 720 WGN. And this station has a signal that reaches about 40 states and parts of Canada. So tell your friends all across the country to tune into the show. And you know what? If they can't hear it via the signal, there is a podcast. Just search WGN Radio Theater Podcast. It'll come up, and you can listen to our shows, and there's hundreds of shows. In fact, this is a program, what,
190.
So there's 190 three-hour podcasts out there.
Just skip the first two. Just start with number three.
Those. They're bad.
Number three is good. That's where we ditched the script.
Lisa was absolutely just brutal on it.
Just forced me to read a script that he had written prior
ready?
To
Let's
the
do
radio
it. Ready?
Show. Okay.
Hi, this is Carl Amari.
And this is Lisa Wolf.
And this is the WGN Radio Theater.
How's that, guys?
Oh,
that was
good?
Awesome. By the way, you didn't know that the glasses did this.
Oh,
did
they
you?
Glow in the dark.
Oh, no, they flash. They light up.
They're flashing.
Flashing on you.
Yeah. That's a good look.
I know.
Yeah.
This is good. Save it, Roger. Save it for the
Do a little Videolicious of that.
Videolicious
of that. He's starting to learn the terminology.
He's trying, Roger.
Yeah, trying.
It's Carl's dictionary.
It's the Carl dictionary.
The Amari instead of the Webster. It's the Amari.
It's the Amari dictionary.
It's very urban.
Urbane? Okay.
In this hour, it's Gunsmoke, and then hour three, we'll tune into Dragnets, all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress and comedian stars in the upcoming animated film Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, which takes place 6 years after the 2012 film Wreck-It Ralph.
It's way too complicated.
Wasn't that? It was a lot of words there.
I did not follow that at all.
All right.
All right, so what do they win?
This you might follow.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to... The winner will get... Two adult and two child general admissions to Sycamore Speedway.
Oh, yeah.
Lot of fun.
That's cool.
That's fun entertainment.
All right. 312-981-7200. That's the number to call to win the tickets. Now, here's a hint. This comedian, who was in a relationship with Jimmy Kimmel from 2002 through 2009, was the star of I Smile Back.
What's more interesting for you, the daddy issues or the drugs?
All right, who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that again.
What's more interesting for you, the daddy issues or the drugs?
And we're going to talk to Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, very good.
Good to hear from you. And who is that actress / comedian?
That would be Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman is the right answer, and you have won a great prize. It's two adult and two child general admissions to Sycamore Speedway. It's for this 2017 race season. You can visit sycamorespeedway.com for more information. I went to their website, and Patrick, it looks like a ton of fun. So I hope that you'll go there, check out the raceway, and let us know how you do.
Okay, will do.
Are you a daredevil?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Then this is for you.
All right.
Have a lot of fun.
Have fun, Patrick.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
You said suckering succotash. Remember that? Remember the suckering succotash?
Of course.
When you say sycamore. Suckering succotash.
All right.
Well, that was those were like loony. Those were the Looney Tunes.
Yep.
Yeah, that was Daffy Duck. Daffy Duck said that. Suckering succotash.
Something like that.
I'm going to talk like this the rest of the show.
That's why you're hired to be a host here at WGN.
All right, it's time for Gunsmoke, Lisa. This was the best Western of all time. It was created by Norman McDonald and John Meston. It aired from 1952 all the way to 1961. And these were stories in and around Dodge City, Kansas in the mid to late 1800s. And they followed the adventures of Marshal Matt Dillon, played by William Conrad, along with his deputy, Chester Proudfoot, played by Parley Bear. Now, Parley Bear, did you know, was the Keebler Elf, the main Keebler Elf.
Yep.
He was also on the Andy Griffith Show. He was the mayor on the Andy Griffith Show. Howard McNear, who was the barber on the Andy Griffith Show, remember?
Yeah,
Floyd the barber?
Of course.
He was Doc
that.
Adams on this, and then Georgia Ellis was Kitty Russell. Dillon was a lonely, isolated man, but he was toughened by a hard life, and he was quite the marshal. You didn't want to mess with him.
No.
Now, this was adapted for television in 1955, ran all the way to 1974 on television.
Amazing.
Entirely new cast, though, on TV. James Arness played Dillon, ranked number one from 1957 through 1961. Time for a radio episode from August 30th, 1952. This is called The Juniper Tree. Stars William Conrad, part one now of Gunsmoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Receive my complaint.
I got it, Mingo. Where's Stanley?
Where do you think? Upstairs.
Brandy?
Naturally. She always does mother him when he's in trouble.
Be careful, Marshal. He might be dangerous.
Well, Marshal, you got a sweet word for Dixie?
Yeah. Move.
Oh, it's not very sweet. It was to the point. Say hello to Jim for me, huh? Go away.
It's me, Brandy. Matt.
Come in, Matt. Join me in a drink?
Where is he, Brandy?
In the next room. Cried himself to sleep.
Save it, Brandy. I gotta take him.
Oh, why, Matt? Jim Stanley never did a mean thing in his life. He's no bad man.
He stole money from Mingo's roulette table and he threw a bottle at him when he was caught. Mingo's pressing charges. Stanley can clear himself in court.
Huh. Against Mingo's witnesses?
Do you bring Stanley out or do I go get him?
Go get him. But I wouldn't be proud, Matt.
Stick to running dance hall girls, Brandy. Let me run the law, huh? Stanley? Stanley!
Oh, it's you, Marshal. I was sleeping.
I want you to come with me, Jim.
Come with you? Sure, Marshal.
You better get up. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, where are we going, Marshal? Would you like to visit my ranch? I got a new colt. The prettiest little sorrel you ever saw.
Jim,
she... What?
We're going to jail.
Jail? Me, Marshal? Do I have to?
Yes, Jim.
I've never been in a jail.
I'm sorry, Jim.
No. No. I can't go in there. No, Marshal, I ain't never been locked up before. Please don't make me...
I have to.
I didn't mean to do it. Honest, I just lost my head when I realized my money was gone. I wouldn't have kept those chips.
I know that.
I just grabbed them. I don't know why they were there, and I just grabbed them, and then Mingo started in on me. Kept saying things, bad things about...
Take it easy, Jim.
I wouldn't have cared, except that, well, Dixie was there. He kept yelling at me that I was a thief right in front of her. I tried to make him stop, and he wouldn't. Then something happened. The bottle was there.
You threw it at Mingo?
No. I just threw it, Marshal. I was crazy. I didn't mean to hurt nobody.
I believe you, Jim.
Marshal, will you ask Dixie to come and see me later?
Yeah, sure. I'll ask her.
Oh, thanks. I just want to tell her not to blame Mingo for all this. She might say something or give up her job.
Don't worry, Jim. I don't think Dixie's going to give up anything.
He won't eat his dinner, Mr. Dillon. He just sits there staring.
Yeah, poor devil.
He won't really be convicted, will he?
Well, I hope not, Chester.
Mingo's the one who ought to be in jail.
Look, Chester, this isn't exactly my idea of justice either. A shady gambler against a simple-minded horse rancher.
Hello, Marshal. Goodbye, Chester.
Goodbye. I'll run along.
You stay put, Chester.
Oh, now, Marshal, I want to be alone with you.
I sent for you to come and visit Jim Stanley, and you better be nice to him.
Most fellas are tickled pink if I like them. They say I'm pretty.
You're pretty enough.
That's better. I knew you liked me.
I said you were pretty. I didn't say I liked you.
Oh, now that's nasty.
Would you like to hear what I really think of you?
No, don't bother. I get the idea.
You're Mingo's girl.
When I feel like it.
Then why do you have to tease a man like Stanley, drive him to drinking and gambling and trouble like he's in now?
He's sweet. He thinks I'm beautiful.
Yeah. But even men like him wake up. Stick to Mingo.
Thought I'd drop in and see if your prisoner was all set for trial tomorrow.
Mingo, I want you to withdraw those charges.
And let that potential murderer go free? No.
You got back the chip Stanley took from your table, and his assaulting a man like you is ridiculous. He doesn't even wear a gun.
A bottle constitutes a deadly weapon. Look it up, Marshal.
Why are you doing this, Mingo? Why pick on a man like Stanley?
Let's say I don't like him always slobbering over Dixie. She's private property.
For that greedy little vixen, he'd send Stanley to prison knowing that it'll probably crack his mind completely?
That's his problem.
You don't understand, Mingo. I don't like to see people pushed around.
Well, don't cross me, Marshal.
I already have. People get dead that way.
Yeah, so I've heard. Now, just who are these witnesses of yours against Stanley?
Ned Cole, Saginaw Henry.
Both on your payroll.
Dixie. Some of the other girls.
All working for you, huh?
Jim Stanley's as good as convicted, Marshal. There's not a thing you can do about it.
Here, Mac. Drink this.
Thanks, Brandy.
You know, all you need to do is stop fighting yourself, Matt. You're mixed up.
Yeah, that's sure true, Brenda. You know, it's funny. When it's something you can fight with your fists and your guns, it's easy. But how do you fight a deal like this?
You gotta clear Jim somehow.
Yeah, with those witnesses against him, Jim can't win in court. Technically, he's a criminal.
Oh, criminal, my foot.
He admits the crimes. The judge will have to sentence him to at least a minimum jail term.
We know there are witnesses who can prove he's innocent. Now, a smart man would find a way to make him talk.
I've been thinking about it. Well, I'll tell Jim you were asking after him. I think he'd like that.
He's Dixie's. I had me a man once, Matt. I traded him for a bottle of brandy. I paid a stiff price for my name.
You're not through yet, Brandy.
Oh, sure. I claim mother to everybody. Take everybody's troubles on my shoulders. Help salve my conscience. Don't ever hurt a person, Matt. You never get through paying for it.
Well, I better be going.
Where?
To try to get some of those witnesses to talk. Hello, Saginaw.
Huh? Oh. It's you.
I've been looking for you.
And you've been looking for trouble.
Well, you're beginning to sound like your boss, Mingo.
It's late. What do you want?
I want to read you something from this book.
What book?
This law book.
Oh, so?
First law I see says that anyone giving a drink to an Indian is liable to fine up to $500. I saw you buy an Indian Pete a drink only last week.
Pete's a stable boy. He ain't no savage.
Law doesn't say savage. Says Indian. Pete's an Indian, so technically you broke the law.
You can't make
Next one says any man that disrobes in a public place is guilty of committing a public nuisance. Carries a fine of $100.
Look, what the devil is all this?
I saw you breaking a horse down in Harrison's Corral a little while back. You took your shirt off, and that's disrobing in a public place. Technically.
You can't get away with this, Dillon.
How much do you make a month, Saginaw? Ooh,
50, 75.
Uh-huh. Well, the way it looks, I can get you fined on enough of these laws to keep you broke for about 5 years.
5 years?
Then we can start all over again.
You're bluffing. I never even heard of these
laws.
Well,
look for yourself. Here. If you witnesses are going to send Jim Stanley to jail on a technicality, then a lot of you are going to jail the same way.
Well, laws may be there, but they ain't fair.
All right, Saginaw, if that's how you want it, come on, let's go to jail.
No, wait.
Well, then start talking.
Well, Dixie shills Stanley into losing his money, and me and Ned Cole egged him into grabbing a couple of chips when the wheelman wasn't looking.
On Mingo's orders?
Sure, Stanley looked down at the chips we swiped, and he reached out to hand them back when Mingo jumped him.
What was Dixie doing?
Trying to keep from laughing.
Yeah, I'll bet. And then what?
Mingo rode Stanley hard to make him break down in front of Dixie. Finally, the poor lunkhead seemed to go crazy. He yelled and tossed a bottle at the bar.
Not at Mingo?
No, missed him by 10 feet. Stanley was just working off his mad by busting the bottle. Paid for it, I guess he had the right.
Yeah, I guess he had.
First, I think Mingo was just deviling Stanley, and then he got the idea to press charges and send him to jail. We got orders out to testify.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks, Saginaw.
Marshal, I'd like you to know something.
Yeah?
I'm glad I told you about Stanley, because framing him into prison isn't my idea of something to be proud of.
It shouldn't be.
All right, that's the first portion of Gunsmoke with the Juniper Tree, starring William Conrad, from August 30th, 1952. Let's take a quick break.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa. Hey, you know what?
What?
It's Monday, which means everyone signed up to freeradioclassics.com is going to get an email from me today around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that email is going to have an embedded classic radio show in it, a half-hour show, digitally remastered. And there'll also be a picture of whoever that radio show is about. If it's Jack Benny, it'll be a Jack Benny picture and so on and so forth. There's also a synopsis of the show. There's a date, the sponsor, the cast. So this is a cool email. It comes every Monday. It's a different classic radio show every Monday sent right to your inbox, and there is absolutely no cost. It's absolutely free. Just go to freeradioclassics.com and sign up. Just put your name and your email address and then hit send, and then you're going to get a confirmation email. Then click yes that you want to start receiving these emails, and then you will get an email every Monday from me, 52 a year. So you can collect 52 classic radio shows a year from us. And the reason why we did this is...
because we love you.
Yeah, we want
to... we appreciate your support.
We want to thank you guys for listening to our program. So we set up this freeradioclassics.com website so you can get a classic email sent to you every Monday. All right, time now for the conclusion to Gunsmoke.
Ah, good evening, Chester.
My, what are you so happy about, Mr. Dillon?
Everything, Chester, everything.
Is it about Jim Stanley?
It is about Jim Stanley. He's going to clear himself in court tomorrow. Come on, let's go tell him.
Well, gracious, that is good news. He couldn't have taken much more of being locked up.
I know. Hey, Jim, wake up. We're going to break... Jim.
Mr. Dillon, he's gone.
Both window bars are cut. Yeah. And here's what cut him.
A hacksaw blade. And look yonder, there's another.
Oh, that fool. Why couldn't he have waited one more day and he'd have been free?
Jim Stanley didn't have those hacksaw blades on him, Mr. Dillon. I know. I searched him good.
You searched Dixie good?
Hmm? Oh, mercy, no, Mr. Dillon. She's a girl.
He didn't have any other visitors?
No, sir. Mingo's going to be awful mad when he finds out his girl helped Jim Stanley get away.
Come on.
You going to arrest Dixie, Mr. Dillon?
I don't know, Chester. First, I got to find her.
Aren't you, Marshal?
Where's Dixie, Mingo?
Dixie, she's gone. I don't know where she is.
You're lying.
Well, I swear she disappeared hours ago.
I still think you're lying. Dixie's here someplace.
Nah, he's telling me the truth for once, man. Dixie's gone, all right.
Are you sure, Brandy?
Saw her ride out of town.
With Stanley?
Yeah, Matt. The two of them.
Dixie and Stanley?
Dixie passed him some saw blades. He cut his way out.
That rotten double-crossing hellcat.
She's your girl, Mingo.
I'll be the laughing stock of Dodge City.
Good. I hope they laugh you clear out of Kansas.
It's the last thing I'll do. I'll find her. Both of them.
Finding them is my job, Mingo.
Go ahead. But you better beat me to them, or you'll be arresting them dead.
Well, they stopped here, all right. Probably changed horses and got some supplies.
That wasn't why Stanley came home. Look, Chester.
What?
Water in the stock trough is right up to the top. The barn's open. Feed pulled out where the stock can reach it. Even scared to death, Jim thought about his animals first.
Mr. Dillon, you think Mingo's trailing Stanley and Dixie, too?
Perhaps. It's one good reason why we better catch him quick. Come on.
Still no sign.
Looks like we've lost them for good now.
What do we do, go back, Mr. Dillon?
Well, we can't let Mingo find them.
Sure, but the way they've been zigzagging back and forth for the last 4 days, we don't have a chance in a thousand.
I'm not so sure, Chester.
Hmm?
You know, there's a certain pattern about the way Stanley and Dixie have been moving. I don't think they're trying to leave this section at all.
Yeah, we have been getting closer and closer to Dodge with every circle lately.
And not only to Dodge.
Mr. Dillon, you got an idea?
Yeah, maybe. Come on, we'll ride back to Stanley's ranch.
You think they came back here?
I will soon find out. But from what we saw here before, I'll bet Stanley's not the kind to stay away from his ranch for very long.
What? I'm hit the dirt. Behind the trough.
Yeah. It's Jim Stanley. There's his horse.
Yeah. All right, keep your eyes open.
Stanley! Jim, it's Matt Dillon. Let me talk to you.
You go away, Marshal. I don't want to hurt you, but I ain't going back to that jail. So you go away now. I'll kill you.
Jim, listen to me. I've got a witness.
You better leave quick now. Please, Marshal.
Mr. Dillon, I'm getting wet.
That's better than getting shot. Keep your head down.
Yes, sir. Sure he is wet.
Stanley's in a good position. Closest cover for us is the barn. That's across 50 yards of clearing. That's a long run.
He could pick us off before we made 10 feet.
Yeah.
Jim! I'm not leaving until I've talked to you.
Leave me alone, Marshal. Can't you leave me alone?
I'm coming to talk to you, Jim.
No! No, stay back! I warn you!
Mr. Dillon, don't do it. That's a crazy man.
That's a frightened man, Chester.
I'm coming unarmed, Jim. I don't think you're a murderer, but if you are, this is your chance.
Well.
Good luck, Mr. Dillon.
Stanley's shot slashed across my side like a branding iron. It was all I could do to ignore my fear and keep going. But somehow I reached the ranch house alive. And I opened the door. Jim Stanley stood there holding his gun. And crying. Jim.
I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I was only trying to scare you. I'm not a killer. I never shot anybody in my life. Honest, Marshal.
I know that, Jim.
I'm afraid. I've always been afraid of things. I try like to be like other people. It only seems to bring trouble.
You can stop being afraid of the law and jail right now. That's all over with.
You mean that, Marshal? Really?
Really.
But I shot you.
Did you? No, I don't recall.
Oh, but Mr. Dillon, shot hit your side. right there. You see it? It's bleeding.
Now, Jim, listen to me. You didn't shoot me.
Oh? Well, all right, if you say so, Mr.
Jones. I say so. Here, I'll take that rifle. Now, let's go back to town and get this business settled, huh?
You've been good to me, Marshal.
Forget it, Jim. There is one thing, though. Dixie.
Oh, she brought me hacksaw blades.
I know that.
She said you were going to hang me and that I had to escape. She kept saying
it. She was riding with you. But where is she now?
Oh, she left me last night. I was glad. I was nearly wild listening to her talk about you and prison. I even swore I'd kill myself before I'd go back to jail.
I'm glad you didn't mean it.
Oh, I meant it at the time. Oh, I was sure scared.
You feel better now?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I know everything's just going to be fine.
The rifle slug splashed the side of Jim's face with red, and he crumpled into the dirt. From the water trough, Chester opened up and drew the fire of whoever was hiding in the hayloft to the barn. I could see a gun barrel poking up from the side of the hayloft. And I picked up Stanley's rifle. Mingo.
Mr. Dillon, are you all right?
Yeah, Chester. But Mingo's dead.
Well, how about Jim Stanley, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, he was scared more than hurt. He should come to any minute.
Well, my goodness. Oh, this looks like a sure enough war's been happening around here.
Where have you been, Dixie?
Oh, sure now, Marshal. A girl's got a right to look after her investments. My Mingo and Stanley both dead. Well, now that's a real shame.
Hmm? Oh, but Jim Stanley's going to be...
Chester, you said investments. The only investment you've made is prison time for helping Jim escape.
Me? Well, how are you going to prove anything, Marshal? With Jim dead?
But he's...
Chester, why don't you go look after the horses?
But Mr. Dillon...
Yes, sir?
It's a right good thing, because I'm going to be terribly busy, you know, taking care of poor Jim's ranch and money and of course, the funeral and everything.
Why should all that concern you, Dixie?
Because I'm Jim Stanley's widow.
What?
I married him 3 days ago in this city. It was such a sweet wedding.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
And... now, all I have left are some memories. And, of course, this little old ranch and Jim's money.
Dixie, there's something you should know.
Hmm?
You also got a husband. Have you heard enough, Jim?
Enough.
Jim, when I saw you fall...
You're bad, Dixie.
Oh, Jim, you mustn't pay no mind to what I said. I was upset. Didn't I come back just to be with you?
No good, Dixie. Jim's on to you now.
Jim, are you going to let him talk to me like that?
He's my friend. And I don't like you now, Dixie.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm still your wife.
Marshal, can she make that stick?
Well, by law, you have to support her, Jim. Of course, I don't say how.
Marshal, you stop putting ideas
in. And, of course, she has to take care of your house for you, Jim. Clean it, do the chores, cook for you.
Cook? Me? Cook for him?
He can make you, Dixie. It's his right.
All right, and not. I'd like to see him try.
He can do it, Dixie.
Yeah? Well, he can't if I'm not here. And I'm leaving right now.
You want to ride into town with us, Jim?
No, I think I'd rather stay here for a while, Marshal. If it's all right.
Yeah, sure. I'll fix it. But in a few days, when you feel like it, come in and see me, and we'll help you get that divorce taken care of.
Divorce?
On grounds of desertion. She just deserted you, remember? Chester and I are your witnesses.
Oh, well, thanks, Marshal. I sure do thank you.
So long, Jim.
Goodbye, Marshal.
Bye.
Come on, Chester, let's go.
He's had it too rough out here on the frontier, hasn't he, Mr. Dillon? Jim Stanley, I mean. It's addled him, sort of.
Yeah, I guess that's it, Chester.
Men like him need looking after.
Yeah, we got all kinds out here, Chester. Come on, let's get back to town.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Herb Purdom, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were John Daner and Michael Ann Barrett, with Paul Dubov, Vivi Janis, and Bill Lally. Harley Bear is Chester. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke.
That is Gunsmoke, a broadcast from August 30th, 1952, with a juniper tree starring William Conrad. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's much more coming your way on the WGN Radio Theater. Ah, yeah, Nick will be in here a little later. We'll chat with him. There's a lot of good movies out. I haven't seen Wonder Woman yet. I want to see that.
I know he just mentioned all these movies opening
Cars
this week.
3.
Yep.
Stacy Keach was in Cars 1 and 2. I wonder if he was in Cars 3. So I'll have to see. Have you gone to the movies at all lately?
The what?
Have you gone to the movies? She has apple in her mouth right now, folks.
What are you talking about?
She started
about?
To chew an apple and she realized she was on the air. Don't spit it out. Oh, gosh. Oh, man, Lisa. That's disgusting. See, the folks out there think she's all prim and proper and so... Oh, that's just disgusting. That's disgusting, Lisa. But you know what? You can pull it off. You can pull up a chewed up apple. Right now, folks, she's showing me chewed up apple.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right.
You have a vivid imagination.
Yeah. Anyway, have you seen any movies lately?
In the movie theater, you mean?
Yeah.
I really rarely go see new movies when they come out in the movie theater. I really do devote my evenings to the theater most of the time.
Oh, that's right.
And
I forgot.
I do have Amazon on my television, so I can see movies.
Do you have Netflix?
I have Netflix, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what.
So I do watch a lot of movies, but not usually right when they come out to the movie theater.
See, I don't have a lot of time to watch TV or go to the movies, but I will try to see a movie like once a week with my daughter.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah, but I haven't seen Wonder Woman yet, and that's doing big box office.
And she'd probably love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I asked her if she wants to see it. She's like, no.
She said no.
She said she doesn't want to. She's like, I don't like superhero movies. She told me that today.
I'll go with my daughter every so often.
Yeah.
But not every week.
But you know what I've been watching on television that I'm completely addicted to? It's in its third season now. Do you know? Fargo.
Oh, yeah, you did mention
Fargo
that.
Fargo is
don't
really...
I usually listen when you tell
folks,
me.
Folks, if you haven't seen Fargo, it's amazing. My Aunt Vicky texted me earlier. She's like, gosh, are you watching Fargo? I said, yeah. It's amazing. The first season, which was 3 years ago, starred Billy Bob Thornton as the murderer on that. He was amazing. I know he won, I think, an Emmy for that role. And then they had a second season with Kirsten Dunst. Was the Kirsten Dunst?
I think Dunst.
Is that her name? Kirsten Dunst?
Yeah, that's
yeah, she
right.
was.
Yeah.
She was the lead in that. This year it is. I'm forgetting his name now. Ewan McGregor.
Oh, okay.
Ewan McGregor. Yeah. He is the lead in it, and it's off the charts good, Lisa. You have to see it.
I'll keep it in mind.
It's all true stories about. Murders that happened in Fargo, and I believe that's Fargo, North Dakota, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
North Dakota. Mm-hmm. Dakota. North Dakota.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah.
You know what? I am looking for something new to watch, so maybe I should take your advice.
You know who does the casting on that show? Yeah. Rachel Tenner Casting, right here in Chicago.
Right here, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed the name at the end of it. Rachel Tenner Casting. She's a big casting director here in Chicago.
Well, she probably also casts in other cities.
Well, yeah,
cities
I'm just saying.
Well.
She's the casting director for that. All right, well, in our next hour, it is Dragnet starring Jack Webb. You won't want to miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thank you, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. It is 1:06 in the morning. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for staying up late with us. We're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. This is Hour 3. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, Lisa Wolf, and our producer, Shantae Garth. And in this hour, it is Dragnet, starring Jack Webb, the most successful police procedural drama ever heard on radio or in the movies or television. And we have an episode for you from 1952. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Helen Parr in the upcoming film The Incredibles 2, the sequel to the 2004 The Incredibles.
All right.
And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
Yeah, Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
Man, I've heard of that.
I have too.
Twilight Zone radio dramas?
I wish I could have
Stacey
that.
With Stacey Keach as the host.
And the producer is...
4 hours?
4 hours.
Some guy, some hors
d'oeuvre. Some jamoke.
Some squid.
Never heard of him.
Calamari guy.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, so if you want to win some Twilight Zone CDs... You'll want to call us at 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. This actress was the co-star of the film Raising Arizona.
We are doing the right thing, aren't we, Hi? I mean, they had more than they could handle.
All right. Love this actress. She's terrific. 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Give us a call. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it one more time.
We are doing the right thing, aren't we, Hi? I mean, they had more than they could handle.
We're going to talk to Richard, and we're going to ask him
like,
if we're doing
mistake.
The right thing.
I'm a giant mistake. I'm just a big, huge mistake.
You're not going to get any arguments from me. Okay. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Good.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
I've been trying to win one of these Twilight Zone CD sets for a long time here, and I'm just tickled to death.
Well,
today's your lucky day.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're in good shape here.
Who's the actress?
Holly Hunter.
Holly
you
Hunter.
Are right.
Well, guess what? You've won.
All right.
You have won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set, and we're so glad that you called in and that you won it. Of course, it's hosted by Stacey Keach and produced by Carl Amari, and it really is a terrific cast and really great stories, very well written, and we hope that you enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks,
Take
Richard.
Care.
Appreciate
All
you.
Right, you guys have a good one.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye.
It's so great. I love giving away fun prizes to our listeners. We just really appreciate our listeners. That's why we have the free radioclassics.com, and we try to do a trivia question every single hour to give you guys some fun stuff, including pizzas by the very generous Lou Malnati's. They give us these great prizes to give away to you, and the Twilight Zone CDs, and all of our other sponsors that give away stuff. So hope you enjoy that, and I hope you're going to enjoy Dragnet right now, because this came to radio in 1949, lasted all the way to 1957. These were true crime cases of closed files from the LAPD, and Jack Webb starred as Sergeant Joe Friday, and each case was detailed from start to finish, with Friday narrating the action, and you'll hear the difference. There's tons and tons of sound effects on Dragnet, because they used 5 sound effects experts on this, and other shows usually only had 1 or 2 sound effects, man or women. And he never said just the fax man. Did you know that, Lisa? He never said that.
I know, we talked about that. It's funny because that I remember that to be the case. Yeah. I don't know where I'm coming up with that.
Never said it. Never said just the fax man.
Well, who said that, then?
Well, Stan Freberg did in his
version.
Parodies of it. You know, just the fax.
Isn't that funny?
When he did the, the Dragnet parodies.
Right.
There was great supporting characters and actors in this, like Frank Lovejoy, Paul Frees, Parley Bear, Harry Bartell. And there were movies and then 16 seasons on television. Very, very successful police drama. We have an episode for you now of Dragnet going back to October 19th, 1952. It's called The Big Pill. Here's part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. Naval intelligence tells you that two Marines have been picked up for the shore patrol. They're reported sick. One is in critical condition. Foul play is suspected. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, July 10th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 7:58 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Morning, Joe.
Hi.
Just get in?
Yeah.
Anything in the book?
I'm looking.
What's the matter? You hacked about something?
No. Why do you ask that?
Well, figures you're sore about something. What'd you do, take a sour pill? You keep this up, you won't be asked to pose for toothpaste ads.
Well, now, that's funny.
All right, Joe. Tell your Uncle Dudley. What's the matter?
Dallas had court deal yesterday. It was miserable.
Thing you and Gaffney been working out?
Yeah, the white glove bandit. Came up while you were out on vacation. Spent over a month on it. Covered it from every angle.
Yeah.
Looked like we had the guy any way he turned. We had an idea how much he'd taken on each job. Lee thought he traced him on every move he made on each of the deals. We figured we really had the guy. DA's office thought so, too.
They acquit him?
Yeah. Let him walk right out. 12 men, good and true. Let that cheap hoodlum walk right out on the streets a free man.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Is there Mr. Friday here?
Yes, sir. I'm Friday. Is something I can do for you?
Well, I'm Richard Houston, Naval Intelligence. Deputy Chief Brown directed me to you.
I see. Well, it's my partner, Frank Smith, Lieutenant Houston.
Hello, Smith.
Like, sit down, sir. What is it we can do for you?
Well, we got a weird one. That's why we thought your department ought to be in on it. About all I can tell you is just the skeleton of the thing. We don't know all the details. We haven't gone into it completely yet. We figured you fellas would like to be in on it from the beginning. Looks like it's going to be a police investigation.
Yes, sir.
To begin, I should go back 3 weeks ago and tell you the story as near as we've been able to reconstruct it.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Well, a couple of Marines left the base. They'd just gotten back from Korea, both on a 48-hour pass. We figured they came up here to L.A. They had a lot of back pay in their pockets. We don't know where they started, but they ended up in a cheap hotel. We got a call from the shore patrol early Monday morning. They'd gotten a complaint that the two boys were causing a disturbance in the hotel. They picked them up and found they both were in a pretty bad way. They had them shipped to the Naval Hospital down at Long Beach. By the time they got there, they were really rocky.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I don't quite see just how we're connected with this.
Well, I'm getting to that.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I'm a little long-winded. Anyway, last night, the boys had been AWOL for over 2 weeks. They were brought into the hospital, like I said. The doctors did what they could, but it was too late to help. One of the boys died late last night. We're not sure about the other one. That's where you come in.
Sir?
They were both poisoned.
A.M. Frank and I talked with Captain Lorman, then we checked out a trip car and left for Long Beach. When we got there, we talked with the doctor in charge. He told us that it would be later that night before the boy would be completely out of danger. He said, however, that we could talk to him if we phrased our questions so that the answers could be kept fairly brief. We looked over the boy's record. His full name was Jack Wayne Walker, age 24. He'd enlisted in the Marine Corps on January 14, 1950. He'd spent almost a year in the Far East, and his service record had been good until this time. The record of the victim, PFC Edward Monahan, was pretty much the same. The boys had both come from the same town in Arkansas. The date of their enlistment was the same. They'd served overseas the same time. At 3:48 p.m., the doctor ushered us into Jack Walker's room.
Who are you?
Police officers, Jack. We'd like to talk to you.
Well, what's it about? I haven't done anything. At least I don't think I did.
No, it's not that. We'd like to find out what happened while you were up in L.A.
Well, I killed my buddy up there. That's what happened. You heard about that, didn't you?
Yes, we did. That's what we want to talk to you about.
Poor Ed. Year in Korea. Guys taking pot shots at us. Cold, mud. Then we got to come back here to get it. I didn't trust that little crumb. I knew we shouldn't have had anything to do with him.
Well, you shouldn't have trusted who, Jack?
Stubby.
You know the rest of his name?
No, just Stubby. I just can't believe it about Ed. We shoved off for L.A. going to have a last fling. Ed was getting married as soon as we got home.
All right, if you could just start right at the beginning.
Well, sure. Well, first, we both had a 48-hour pass. We figured to go to L.A., like I said, for last fling. A few drinks, look at some of the lights, have a little fun. Sort of a bachelor party for Ed before he got hitched, you know? Well, we pulled into town. Let's see, I think it was Saturday morning. A couple of buddies told us about a joint up there where we could have some fun.
Yeah.
Well, we head up there, and nice little place that hour of the morning, I guess about 10:30. Well, we start in to drink. It gets pretty foggy after that. Like little parts in a jigsaw, you know. You sort of see a little bit of everything, but the whole picture ain't there.
Yeah.
Well, I remember we hung around the place for 2 days, and then it all really goes black. The next thing I remember, we woke up in some flea bag. I remember looking at the calendar on the wall. We was already a couple days AWOL. Ed and I talked about what we should do. Mm-hmm. And then we get to trying to think up an excuse for the CO for being AWOL. Well, our CO ain't easy. He's had experts try it. Ed says he figured out something, so we start for the bus depot, get back to base. On the way, we pass this bar, and Ed says, well, maybe we ought to stop and have one more for the road, so we do, and I don't remember much for a couple more days. Mm-hmm. And I remember once we stopped and watched a guy get tattooed. Ed and I got talking about it, you know, whether or not we should have it done. Finally, figured it was kind of kid stuff, so we didn't. I remember that because it was right after we left the tattoo place, went to this bar where we met Stubby.
Well, this is the fellow that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's him.
And you met him in a bar, isn't
it? Uh-huh, yeah. Ed and I were sitting there trying to figure out what we was going to do, you know. We were pretty broke by this time, and then we was over 2 weeks AWOL. Anyway, sliced it, we had big trouble.
Yeah.
Well, we walks into this place. It was about 4:35 in the afternoon. At least near as I can tell, that's about what time it was. The whole deal gets kind of foggy. We sat down at this bar and ordered a drink, and just sitting there minding our own business, trying to figure what we ought to do. Then this Stubby joker comes up, sits down next to Ed, brings a drink with him.
He was in the bar when you came in, is that right?
Yeah. Well, at least I think so. I didn't pay much attention, but he had a drink when he come up to Ed and me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he got to talking about the Corps, and next thing we know, he's setting up the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
The way we was fixed, as long as he wanted to buy, we wasn't going to argue.
Mm-hmm. Did they seem to know this Stubby in the bar?
Yeah, a girl waits on tables called him my name.
All right, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, well, this Stubby kept going on about how he liked the Corps and how he'd won a whole flock of citations in Korea. Told us all about the time he'd spent in Japan. First, we thought he was just throwing a bunch of coconuts at us, but we'd ask him about places in Korea and things you could only know if you was there. He'd come up with the answers all right, but even with all that, there was something that just didn't ring true with him.
Yeah.
Anyway, long about 8 or 8:30 that night, Stubby got in a thrash with the bartender, something about the price of the drinks, so he suggested we go up to his place and get a jug, you know, and drink up there. Well, I wasn't too hot for the idea, but Ed said we had nothing to lose, and we didn't have a sack for the night, and there wasn't much dough left, so we shoved off with him.
Where'd this Stubby live?
A hotel down on Fifth. I'll tell you how to find the place.
Same place you were picked up in?
Yeah.
We got the address then.
Oh, then okay.
Well, what happened when you got Stubby's room?
Oh, we cracked the jug, sat around drinking for a while, and then Ed and I went to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, the next morning we had the biggest hangovers in the entire United States and Canada, both of us. We felt miserable. Ed started beefing about the cheap booze Stubby'd rung in on us. That's when he tried to tout us on them pills.
What pills are those, Jack?
One of them things supposed to relieve hangovers.
Oh, you mean the kind they sell in drugstores?
Oh, no, not them. Stubby told us about that one. He'd come back to the States. He'd stood some duty in a hospital and said that while he was there, he got them pills. Said there was a special prescription, that they was great for head shrinking. He wanted us to try them.
Well, did you?
Well, no, not right away. He kept after us, though, kidding us about being big, tough Marines with a hangover. And then he took one of the pills, at least wise we thought he did. So Ed and I figured then we didn't have anything to lose.
You took one of these hangover pills then, did you?
Yeah, we both did.
Mm-hmm. What happened then?
Well, nothing right away. Stubby said take a little time for it to take effect. We got up, started to get dressed. And Ed and I thought we'd better get back to the base, you know. We'd probably be in enough trouble as it was without worrying about a hangover.
Yeah. You left the room?
No, we was just getting our stuff together, and Ed took sick. Said he had awful pain in his stomach, like a cramp, you know. And we asked Stubby if the pill could have caused it. He said no. It must have been the booze.
Yeah.
Well, right about then, I was getting ready to mop up the place with this Stubby. I figured sure he'd given us a Mickey. I couldn't figure why, though. And then it hit me.
That pill, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Real bad cramps in my stomach. I got real dizzy. Room started to go around. And we asked the Stubby to call a doctor, and that's when we knew he was really in trouble.
How's that?
Well, we knew then he was nuts off his trolley. And neither of us could walk. Ed doubled up and passed out, and I could hardly keep awake. We both just lay there on the floor. I kept asking this bum to get us a medic.
Mm-hmm. Did he?
No, he just stood there and laughed at us. Laughed like a crazy fool. He kept saying we was big, strong Marines. We should be able to take a little stomach ache without running to a doctor.
At no time did he make any attempt to get you medical help?
No, just like I said, he just stood there and laughed at us. Then he got real mean. Got crazy leer on his face. Said he'd show us that he'd fix us up good for what we'd done.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I don't know. All I thought about was getting Ed and me to a doc. About this time, I didn't much care what the little screwball did. Then it really started harping on how he's getting even with us. I tried to get at him. I'd have killed him if I could have. I tried to get at him, but I fell and went out, I guess. And that's when he said that thing about that we wouldn't be the last ones he'd get.
What?
Well, he said like this, you guys are the first, just the first, but there's going to be more, a lot more.
All right, that is the first portion of Dragnet. A good broadcast from October 19th, 1952, with The Big Pill. And you're listening to Jack Webb, along with Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Jack Crucian, all in this Dragnet episode right here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break, then it's more right here on 720 WGN.
I would love to go to Anderson's.
You know, earlier I was saying suckering succotash, but it's actually
suffering.
Suffering.
But
suffering,
you were so close.
Suffering fuckatash.
You were so
I
close.
I said suckering.
Yeah, suckering, suffering. It's a couple
suffering,
of letters.
Suffering fuckatash. Yeah,
yeah,
I got it now.
June 24th
Thank you,
and
folks.
25th. I think we should go to this, Carl.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
It's in Sycamore?
It's in
Sycamore.
No, no.
It's in Sycamore?
It's
no,
in
it's
Richmond.
It's in Richmond.
Richmond. Where is that?
I'm getting in confused.
Where's Richmond?
Richmond, Illinois, somewhere. I don't know.
Right. Well, take
Not
me
sure.
there and we'll go have some chocolate.
No, you know what we do? Let's, we can Google it. Huh?
Yeah, but we could drive
we
there.
We can Navi.
And we can, you know, it's 98 years they've been around. They must be doing something right.
I love Anderson chocolates.
I haven't tasted it.
Oh, Anderson chocolates are great.
I need to have some Anderson chocolates.
Yeah, good stuff,
Let's
Lisa.
Go.
You like the dark chocolate, though.
I do.
I like the milk chocolate.
Well, I'm guessing they're going to have some of both.
See, we are completely different when it comes to chocolate.
Well, why don't we say we're complementary?
Speaking of differences, whatever happened to your radio show? Someone texted earlier and said...
Solutions
with Lisa. Whatever happened to your talk show?
I think I need a good agent to find a good slot
I know one.
For me.
Elliot. Elliot Ephraim, he's the best agent in Chicago.
All right. Well, you know, hook me up, Carl.
I know. I tried to get him to represent me.
He didn't want to?
He was like, I went and met with him.
Right.
And he was just like, I'll get back to
Isn't
you.
Isn't he a lawyer?
Yeah, but he's like the top guy.
He's a lawyer or an agent or
he's
both?
He's both.
Oh, that's
and
a good combo.
I wanted him to represent me. I didn't make the grade.
Really?
Someday I will, though. Someday I will make the grade.
Maybe you could hook me up with
him.
Yeah,
you need to be represented by him.
I need
and
somebody.
And then you'll get a talk show.
All right. Well, if anybody has any agents out there, hook me up.
Lisa wants her own.
I need a hookup.
Lisa wants her own kind of a, it's almost like a Dr. Ruth type
yes,
of show, right?
That's right.
And can I please tag along and be.
You can be my second banana.
You know what?
What?
I'll get you.
You know what, Carl? You just sit there and don't
get
talk.
You food and
that's
I won't talk. I'll just
that's
sit
what
in the,
Carl said to me the first time I came to a
I'll
radio
sit in the
station.
Corner. That's not.
Yeah.
That's not nice. I didn't say that.
You
did I? I didn't say
well,
that.
Well, I wasn't actually working
no,
for
I was
you
saying,
yet.
Okay,
it was
well,
just,
you weren't on the radio. I was like,
right.
You got. What I meant, like, don't talk. I mean, we can't have background noise. That's all I meant.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah. But then Lisa was so great at.
At sitting quietly.
No, you know what you did? Lisa did like little trivia and stuff and segments on the show. And I was like, this is a talented woman.
I had a theater segment, too.
I'm like, this is a very talented on-air person. Let's bump you up.
Let's go to WGN.
Let's bump you up a little bit. And then now she's co-host. Yeah. So can I start somewhere? Like, as a, I would just be like an intern to start things
that
out.
That sounds perfect.
Be your intern on your talk show.
That
Solutions
would be great.
With Lisa. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Or we could call it whatever you want.
We have to figure out a way to get you on the air with
All
that.
All right, we're going
to
work it.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Esmeralda Leon. Also, thank you, Roger Badish. And this is our weekend radio show on WGN. We play all your favorite classic radio shows. You name it, we have it. Have Gun, Will Travel, Suspense, Boston Blackie, The Charlie McCarthy Show, Life with Luigi, The Bickersons. We have The Shadow. Did
you
I say
said that?
I said that already.
Lum and Abner.
Yeah, Lum and Abner.
The Aldrich family.
The Aldrich family. We have, what else?
We have the Damon Runyon Theater.
Yeah, we have X-1.
My Favorite Husband.
Yeah, you name it. We play it. We have all these great radio shows
Benny,
here.
Jack Benny, which is a favorite.
Burns and Allen. And Lisa and I are here along with Shante Garth every Saturday and Sunday night. 11 p.m. is our start time, and we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. And thanks for staying up late with us. This is Hour 3, and we're tuning into Dragnet. Let's get back to the conclusion now of The Big Pill, starring Jack Webb on Dragnet.
We continued to talk to Jack Walker. He gave us a complete description of the man he'd known as Stubby. And going over the story again with him, there were a few changes in it, but none that couldn't be accounted for by his condition. We got the address of the bar where he'd met Stubby. We checked with the doctor, and he told us that both boys had been given a powerful corrosive poison. He went on to say that it was a miracle that Jack Walker was still alive. 9:26 p.m. Frank and I drove back to Los Angeles. We checked into the office and ran the name Stubby through the moniker file in R&I, but we found nothing. We got out a local and an APB on the description and the name. The stats office started a run on the M.O. Frank and I checked the hotel on 5th Street, and the manager showed us the room, but he said that it had been cleaned and occupied since the two Marines had left. Leighton Prince went over the room but failed to come up with anything. We took the hotel registration card and booked it in as evidence. The man had signed his name as Alton Richards. The manager gave us the same description as the one we'd gotten from the Marine. We ran the name through R&I, but we failed to come up with any new leads. There'd been no replies to the broadcast, and the stats office had finished the run and had come up with 4 possible suspects. These were checked out, but they led us nowhere. 2:30 a.m. We checked the bar, but we found it was closed. Wednesday, 8:14 a.m. We briefed Captain Lorman on the developments, and then we went over to again check the bar where the two Marines were supposed to have met Stubby. The place was deserted except for one man drinking a beer. The waitress was sitting in a rear booth filing her fingernails. Frank and I went back to talk to her.
Yeah, something you want?
Well, police officers, miss. We'd like to talk to you.
Cops.
Yes, ma'am. This is my partner, Joe Friday. My name's Smith.
Smith? Boy, does that sound phony.
Here's my ID card.
Yeah, it's Smith, all right. What do you want?
Would you mind if we sit down?
No, go ahead. Live.
Thank you.
What's this all about?
Do you work here steady?
Yeah, most of the time.
What's your name, miss?
Vera. Vera Gay.
Well, Miss Gay, were you working here around the 8th and 9th or the 10th of July?
Yeah, and you can make it Vera.
Mm-hmm. You know most of the people who come in here regularly, do you?
Yeah, I suppose so. I
wonder if you'd look at this description and tell us if you know the man here.
WMA. What does that mean?
White male American.
Yeah, WMA. 36 years, 5 feet 7 to 5 feet 9, 155 pounds stubby.
Yeah?
Yeah, I know him. Comes in here all the time. Nice guy. Loud when he gets drunk. He's always nice to me, though. Tells me I should be in pictures. You know, the movies.
Yes, ma'am. Have you seen him today?
No, he hardly ever gets in before maybe noon, 1 o'clock. At least doesn't bother you, does it? Am I filing my nails?
Not at all.
He does bother some people, you know. Mm-hmm. Like running a piece of chalk down a blackboard.
Miss Stubby, does he have any other name? Would you know it?
Yeah, Paul Rogers.
That's another one, Joan. Yeah. And you want to go ahead, miss?
Yeah, I went out with him a couple of times. Finally gave it up. I couldn't go that route.
What's that, ma'am?
All he talked about was either him and the Marine Corps and what a big hero he was, or else how he was going to get me in pictures, you know, movies.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't come out to California to get in the movies. Well, I came out to be a private secretary, only those jobs are a little hard to get, so I work here. Make enough for coffee and cakes. And when a job comes along, I'll take it. Work in a big office, nice boss. Who knows, he might even marry me. Well, that movie hokum for me, no sir, not your little Vera.
Did you work on the night of the 9th? That's the night before last.
Let's see, yeah, I was in.
You happened to see the Stubby Rogers that night?
Well, I gotta think about that, let's see. That was the night we had the fight just before closing. Yeah, he was in earlier.
You happen to notice if he was with anybody?
What's it all about? He'd do something you want him for?
No, we just like to talk to him.
Yeah. Well, if he did anything, we had nothing to do with it. This is a good place. We got nothing to do with the people who come in. Got the price of a drink, they get served. We don't ask for trouble.
Oh, we aren't going to cause any trouble, miss. We just want to talk to this Rogers.
Yeah, well, as long as we aren't wrong into it.
Do you remember if he was with anyone?
Yeah, he was with a couple of Marines. Left with him, had a beef with Sam. He's a night bartender. Complained that the drinks were too high. I don't know what he was crying about. He's been drinking here a long time. Never had problems before.
You saw him leave with these two Marines then?
Yeah, three of them walked out. I think, actually, they sort of floated out. The two kids were really boiled.
You remember what time it was when they left?
Oh, that'd be kind of hard to tell. We were pretty busy.
It was pretty important, miss.
Now, let me think. I guess maybe around 8, maybe 8:30, around in there. It's just a guess, though.
Do you have any idea where this Rogers lives?
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times. Hotel on South Hill.
Can you give us the address?
Yeah, I got it in the purse. I should have known he was a phony, always saying it's how he could get me in pictures, you know, in movies.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't come that way. Of course, you understand I didn't come out here to get in pictures. I came out to be a private secretary. Here's the address. Here, keep it. I won't be using it anymore.
All right, thank you, Miss Kay. Here's our card. If you think of anything more you think we ought to know, we'd appreciate a call from you.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure appreciate your help.
Well, you never know. Maybe I'll need your help sometime. Matter of fact, you might be able to lend me a hand.
What's that, miss?
You know any picture producers? You know, movies?
Frank called the name Paul Rogers into the office and a supplementary broadcast and an APB were gotten out. A stakeout was arranged on the bar. We went back to the city hall and a check through R&I on the name Paul Rogers netted us nothing. We drove over to the hotel on South Hill. The manager told us that Rogers was not in his room. He went on to say that Rogers had not been using his room regularly for the past week or so, but that he had been in a couple of days before in the company of a soldier, and that as far as he knew, the soldier was still in. In the company of the manager, Frank and I went upstairs. The manager unlocked the door and we went in.
Wait a minute, Frank, there's someone in bed.
Yeah.
Come on, you.
How about it?
Just a minute.
How about it, Joe?
I don't know. He's dead.
Wednesday, July 11th, 12:40 p.m. We called the coroner's office, then we got in touch with the crime lab and the photographers. After the pictures had been taken, the body was removed. The victim was a soldier in his mid-30s. On the nightstand beside the bed, we found an empty pill bottle and a suicide note. The note was booked as evidence and turned over to Don Meyer for comparison with a handwriting taken from the hotel registration card that Rogers had signed. The men from Leighton Prince went over the place thoroughly. They came up with several classifiable prints. Fingerprints found on the bottle belonged to the victim. There were several other sets in the room which were not identified. The crime lab went over the room, and then they went back to the lab to make their analysis. All officers in the area were alerted to be on the lookout for Rogers. Frank and I talked to the manager of the hotel, a Henry Corey. He told us that Rogers had lived in the hotel for the past 4.5 months. He said that Rogers was quiet, kept pretty much to himself, and for the most part was a good tenant. He said that on several occasions, Rogers had gotten behind in his rent, but that he'd always managed to come up with the money. The manager told us that in the conversations he'd had with Rogers, the main topic had been the Marine Corps and the suspect's record overseas. Rogers presented himself as an armchair general, constantly calling down the way the situation was being handled. He would refer to his own exploits, but when questioned about his leaving the service, he became vague and evasive. Additional handwriting samples were obtained and sent to Meyer. The manager told us that the latest victim had come in with Rogers the night before, and that at the time he'd been pretty drunk. They'd gone upstairs, and when Rogers had left in the morning, the manager had assumed that the soldier had gone the night before. 3:20 p.m. Frank and I went back to relieve the stakeout at the bar.
Back again?
Yes, Miss Gay.
Sit down.
Thank you.
It seems like every time I see you, I'm doing something with my nails. This morning, filing them, now I'm filing them again. I'm going to put polish on them after this. I guess you think I'm pretty vain.
No, not at all, miss.
New color called Frosted Rose. And pretty?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of iridescent, it's what the label says. To sprinkle your nails with stardust.
Yes, ma'am.
It's a pretty bottle, too. They sure put things up nice nowadays. Uh-oh, here comes your boy.
It's Rogers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stubby, where'll it be?
Bourbon Coke.
How's it going, Stubby?
Same old six as before.
Yeah, pretty dull.
Yeah, you're doing a great business.
No, it's early yet. Here's your drink. It'll be 4 bits.
There you go. All right, tastes good.
All right, Frank, let's go.
No trouble now.
Not unless he makes it.
Hi, fellas. Something you want?
You Paul Rogers?
Yeah, who are you?
Police officers. We'd like to talk to you.
I don't want any trouble in here.
No, there's not going to be any trouble.
Always fights. Why is it everybody comes into a bar and starts fights? Ain't there someplace else to be?
All right, come on, Rogers.
What for? You got nothing to haul me in.
We'll talk to you about that, too.
Well, let me finish my drink.
No, afraid not. Let's go now.
Look, I said I was going to finish my drink. Don't lean.
Let's can it, mister, and go.
I said I was going to finish my drink.
All right, mister, on your feet. Nothing on him. Let's take him to the office.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Sure appreciate it.
Well, what's that?
Thought for a minute there you were going to have a fight.
We took the suspect back to the city hall. Then we checked the name through the Marine base in San Diego. Lieutenant Richard Houston called back to say that Rogers had received a court-martial and a dishonorable discharge in January of that year. He'd been tried by a military court on a charge of stealing alcohol from the hospital pharmacy and selling it to the patients in the hospital. We stopped in handwriting analysis, and Don Meyer took an exemplar of the suspect's writing. When we checked by the office, there was a message from Sergeants Bill Cummings and Harry Hansen stating that their investigation had shown that the death of the soldier in Rogers' room was suicide beyond any doubt. 7:46 p.m. Frank and I talked to the suspect in the interrogation room.
Terrible thing, treating a veteran like this.
All right, let's save it, Rogers. There's a few questions we'd like some answers to.
I got nothing to hide.
All right, what were the conditions of your discharge from the Marine Corps?
What do you mean?
Did you get an honorable discharge or a dishonorable discharge?
I had a little trouble. Lousy officers. Never did understand what the problems of the enlisted man were.
What do you do for a living, Rogers?
I work.
Where?
Around.
You have a steady job?
What do you mean steady?
One you've held for, say, more than 6 months?
Haven't been out of the service that long.
Where'd you serve in the Corps?
Japan, Korea.
How long are you there?
About 4 or 5 months.
Why'd you come back?
I was wounded.
How?
What do you mean, how?
Just that. How were you wounded?
Well, I wasn't exactly wounded. I had my feet frostbitten.
Mm-hmm. According to this here, you went AWOL and got lost. When they found you, your feet were frozen. Is that right?
What's that you got?
Your record in the Corps.
Got a lot of nerve digging into that. That's what you got me in here for anyway. I done nothing to put me in line for this kind of treatment.
You know a couple of Marines named Ed Monahan and Jack Walker?
Monahan? Walker? No, I don't think I know.
You ever register in a hotel on Fifth Street?
No, I live over on Hill.
You know a soldier named Marty Wilkins?
What's he got to do with it?
We found him dead in your room.
You're cracking up.
Yeah, sure, Rogers. We just dreamed we'd found that body.
Nothing to do with him. Met him in a bar. He said he wasn't feeling too good. Said he didn't have a place to sleep. I let him have my room. Something wrong in that? Be a little kind, and now even that gets you in trouble.
You sure you don't know a Marine named Ed Monahan?
Positive.
There's something wrong, Rogers. Girl at the bar says she saw you leave the place with two Marines. They could have been Monahan and Walker.
Well, maybe I know them. I might and still not know their names.
You didn't take them up to a room you'd rented in a hotel on Fifth Street?
No, I told you once I never lived on Fifth.
Checked with our handwriting man. He says your writing matches some samples we found on a hotel register.
Maybe I write like somebody else.
No, we don't think so, mister. How about Jack Walker? Maybe you know him, you just didn't remember him.
No, I keep telling you, I don't know them.
Vera says you do.
Well, she's lying.
Is she?
Sure she is. She's trying to save her own skin.
From what?
She doesn't want to stand a rap for murder, can't you see?
Yeah, go ahead, Rogers.
I'm saying nothing until I see my lawyer.
You sure you don't want to tell us why you did it?
I got nothing to say.
Makes it tough, Rogers.
What do you mean?
Just makes it rough, that's all. Looks like you're going to have to stand a murder rap.
Yeah?
It's the way it looks.
Well, I didn't mean it. I didn't. I just wanted to get even, that's all. Just get even.
For what, Rogers?
For the way the Corps treated me. Kicked me out. I didn't do anything really wrong. Cop a little alcohol, that's all. No harm done.
They look at it a little different.
Yeah, that's the trouble. Stinking brass, they're all alike. They don't care what happens to us. The guys in the field. I tried to get a job. I looked everywhere. I just didn't fit. Seemed like everywhere I went, I got into trouble. I wanted like it was when I first went in. Like it was after boot camp. Walking down the street, girls looking at you, a Marine, a big man. They took that away from me. They wouldn't let me enlist again. I tried, but they wouldn't let me. You can understand what that'd do to a guy, can't you?
I don't know.
It'll tear me apart. Right then, I decided to get even with all the stinking gyrenes in the world. They wouldn't let me in, and I hated them.
Yeah. Remember what happened the day you gave the two boys the pills, do you?
Sure, remember all of it. Oh, they cried for a medic. They weren't big men then. No, sir, they sure weren't.
All right, Rogers, we'll get a stenographer.
Tell me, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Did I get both of them?
No, Walker's going to be all right.
He the young one?
That's right.
A real nice kid. Lucky, too.
Is that right?
Yeah. No worries. Really got it made. Uniform, that's what does it. Uniform makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, well, don't worry. You'll get one.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On November 13th, trial was held in Department 87, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Paul M. Rogers was tried and convicted on one count of murder in the first degree. He was sentenced to life imprisonment in the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Jack Crucian. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Tonight, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator on NBC.
All right, that is Dragnet from October 19th, 1952, with The Big Pill starring Jack Webb.